there are two things that limit the kinds of damages that you can recover. One is the way the claim is framed. Our claim against Whittemore is framed for your losses arising out of the non-payment of part of your purchase or your selling price. The other limiting factor is what the law will impose no matter what you claim. I gather you said something recently to Marvin about this claim for damages should be only limited by imagination. Well, the law doesn't work that way. What you're trying to do in claiming economic loss beyond the $41,000 in interest, and the law recognizes the $40,000 plus interest, beyond that, the law will not recognize a wage claim for your disruption. It will not recognize a loss of investment opportunity. And so you're asking us to factor in, whether it's before the court or whether it's in settlement negotiations, things that we don't think we can recover for you.
So I gather you have another offer for me.
No, I don't have. Not from them. I don't have another offer. The only offer that they've made is $2,500, and I suppose for what it's worth, that is even time lapsed at this point, although it's probably still available.
I'm not interested.
No, I didn't expect
it's a nuisance offer, is what it's, I've been told it is.
If you're talking about, do we have another suggested figure for you that we think we should counter at? We don't have a different one. We've got the same one we discussed with you last week, and that is $7,500.
No, I'm not interested in that either. I'd like to read for you something that I found in some research that I've been doing at the law library that falls under corporations, failure to incorporate company properly, and I gather that was an oversight on the attorney's part. Damages were awarded for mental distress, aggravation, and cost of remedying defenses. So, you know, as far as you're talking here, you're talking principal plus interest. They're talking about remedying defenses. I would be referring to your costs here as remedying defenses. And by costs, I don't mean just your filing fees. I mean your entire costs, the time that you spent on this case.
What we are able to, if we win this, what we are able to recover are the taxable costs of this proceeding. Those are set down in a scale. They don't represent all legal fees. They represent part of legal fees. So if you are successful, you will get part of your legal fees paid through costs. The other part you will have to pay yourself.
And there's a better chance that this will be brought to the attention of the Law Society one more time, and Whittemore at least will face a reprimand from them if we go to court.
That's not something you can factor into the settlement value. I mean, if you settle this thing, it will be done on a release of all claims that involves a disclaimer of liability but a payment of money. Now, that may sound like a contradiction, but that's the way it's done. Whether you were settling with ICBC for a guy who ran into the back of you, or whether you're settling for Whittemore, who may or may not have done you proud in the way he did your documents.
That's to put it mildly. He's being charged with an ethical breach here, and I understand that an ethical breach is just about the highest breach the lawyer can face reprimand.
No, it's not.
Well, there is absolutely nothing worse than lying bold-faced to your client.
I did two terms as a bencher. I sat in judgment on lawyers. I know what's worse than this.
Okay. Well, personally, I think this is bad enough, and it seems to me when the claim goes from being negligent to actually being a question of one's lawyer's integrity, the damages are worse. I haven't had a whole lot of time to research what all is out there in the way of precedent cases, but this is what I've been spending my time doing now in between running to Vernon, which is something I don't think I'm going to be able to do to deliver that subpoena.
It's okay.
Adrian, if you could do that, I would appreciate that. I've made three trips up there already in that truck. I'm going to have a flat tire on one of four tires. Take your pick. They all need replacing. And that's just one of my concerns with that truck. You know, it's a half a tank of gas to go to Vernon and back in that truck. And I just don't have the resources to do that on a continuing basis. You have access to ways to serve him that. If it's supposed to be served to him, then it should be.
Yeah, just give us his phone number.
That's been done.
that he has that?
Yes.
Okay. I believe so. I can give it to you again just in case you didn't write it down, but she did get his address and his phone number from me yesterday.
Okay. That's all you.
There's a, are you adamant that you will not give us the instructions to counter at $7,500?
Yes.
Okay. Because there's something happening here, David, and it's been going on. I've been involved in this file directly with you for the last month or thereabouts. And there's something that's going on, and it's accelerating over that time frame, and that is a distinct lack of evidence, distrust on your part for us as your lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
It manifests itself in several ways. It's things that you've said to us where you have directly questioned our motivation to act for you. You have begun tape recording discussions with Marvin and myself, and I can see that you're doing that again today.
Yes, I am.
It has to do with you doing your own legal research and arguing with us about what the law is. And those are probably the best examples that come to mind. The relationship between the lawyer and their client is one that in law is a relationship of trust. That carries with it an obligation on our part to act for you to the best of our ability. But it also carries with it, that's the negative from our side in the sense that it's the standard we have to meet. But in exchange for that high standard that we have to fulfill on your behalf, we are entitled to a certain amount of respect from our clients as professionals. And I don't mean, it's not like we're thin skinned, but it's a matter of there being so much judgment and discretion involved in how you formulate a settlement offer, how you evaluate your chances of recovery from the subsidiary that received these assets, and that's still out there, and it's not resolved at this point. It looks somewhat promising, but where it will entirely go, we don't know for certain at this stage. And if we don't have that mutual rapport of confidence in each other, then we can't act as your solicitors anymore. And what we're doing is we're buying ourselves nothing but trouble, buying ourselves a long-term headache, because no matter what happens, at the very best, if we win this thing hands down, you're going to say that we should have claimed other kinds of damages. You're going to say that you don't like our fees. If we don't win it completely, but we win it partially, you will find fault with that. And if we lose it entirely, and I told you the other day that I view our chances as less than 50-50 of succeeding, then you're really going to be unhappy. It's a no-win situation from us, from our perspective as lawyers.
Would you like to defend your clauses here? Like, for instance, let's start with the most recent one as far as my inability to have complete faith in my attorneys. Let's start with Adrian's affidavit. Place in here. I believe I've got it. I'm shuffling through these again. I spent a lot of time at night sitting at home worrying, talking to other people on the phone, reading these things, and trying to make heads and tails of exactly where I stand with regards to this whole issue and with regards to where you stand on this whole issue. Oh, okay. There we go. Copy of Adrian's affidavit. Now, you told me over the phone yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, that maybe it was the day before. I'm not quite certain, but you did tell me when I pointed out Clause 3 to you that it wasn't important because we were the only ones that had a copy of this. You recall telling me that, eh, Marvin?
Not tonight.
Okay. What is this stamp here? January 27, 1995, Kelowna Registry.
Okay. It was filed.
It was filed. So we're not the only ones that have a copy of this.
We have it served on the other side.
It's sitting in the file for them to go and get any time they want to, and it's down there in black and white, and there's a discrepancy in here. There's still a discrepancy in my statement of claim as to the dates, as to when they were supposed to pay me out. It states in my statement of claim that the date that they were supposed to be paid out in total was 1992. That's the date that I came in here to see you folks. 1993 was when it was supposed to be paid out. 1992 is when they started the default. May of 92, I quit getting payments from them. They made one more payment of 2 months' worth because they were due to go to court with Laidlaw, and they wanted to be caught up with me so they could state that honestly in court. So they sent a check for the 2 months to cover me in June. So there's a couple of reasons why I am suspicious. Another reason is that you come forward to me with a $2,500 offer on this settlement that's over $41,700. You seem to think it's a fair offer. You suggest maybe covering back at $5,000.
I never said $2,500 was a fair offer, and okay. I never suggested we counter at five.
Who suggested that we counter at five?
Not me.
Was it Marvin? Well, somebody mentioned the figure $5,000, and when I denied that, then you suggested that, well, he's out of pocket a total of $10,000 over a five-year period that he will actually lay out in cash to cover his costs in the event of a loss here. So perhaps he'd be willing to settle out of court for $7,500.
No. Last week, when we were discussing the fact that that offer had come in from them, and we didn't encourage that offer, it came in out of the blue, you wanted to know how it worked from there, and I said, we can go back to them with an offer at $5,000, $7,500, $10,000, $20,000, and I gave you several numbers. And the one that I recommended that we go back at that I thought was achievable and bore some semblance of correspondence to the value of your claim and its chances of success was $7,500.
I see. Okay. I'm curious now. Have we got the notes prior to and after each note that Mr. Whittemore has set down his testimony?
I don't know what you mean by notes.
Well, he's been taking notes. Telephone conversations, he's made notes of.
With who?
Well, I believe now he states with Mr. Ross that he's made notes. Apparently he's made notes when he's talked to me. Apparently he's made notes on numerous occasions, and we do have four or five scribbles that he concludes are his notes. Have we got the notes, like, from the appointment before that, from the phone call before that, from the appointment or phone call after that?
I don't know. I'm not in his office.
Martin, have we got those notes? Have we subpoenaed any of the notes prior to or after?
How are they relevant?
Well, in that, if he wrote notes after the fact, perhaps they're not going to match in the pen that was applied to the paper, or perhaps the paper is different. Would be an indication that he made these notes long after the fact. It's not uncommon for people to do that, I gather. Do we have anything from the telephone company to substantiate any of the phone calls that he's testifying to any of the phone calls that I'm testifying to? We don't have any evidence here, I suspect, because we haven't gotten any. We were looking at losing an 18A application. As you told me, our chances were very slim indeed. But we didn't have any testimony from Bell Northway. We didn't have any testimony from any of the principals that were involved in here. I started to really press that issue, as you recall. I've been asking about testimony from people, taking a statement from them for over a year now. We've known of Mark Whittemore's defense for over a year now. We certainly should have had our testimony all together, and I'm sure we'd have been negotiating much sooner if he'd have realized sooner that we were actually doing our jobs and we were building a case against him.
We've already been all through this, David. I mean, I don't see any point in going through it for the third or fourth time.
Well, I do, because I had never got it on tape before. I want to know, first off, why did we wait till sometimes late in January before we got any statements from anybody to try and support my claim?
First of all, we have no guarantee or way of knowing whether they're going to make an 18A in advance of the trial or not. They did. I never said that they had a good chance of succeeding on an 18A. I viewed it as a credibility contest between you and Whittemore, and that they likely would not succeed on an 18A.
Well, but I didn't get your opinion on that, though.
I've also told you that when it gets to an actual trial and the tests change as to who wins and who loses, that I think that you don't have a 50% chance of winning.
That is your opinion.
Yes, it is.
And it's a learned opinion, and I can value that.
It is what it is.
I still have to take what you folks here tell me with a grain of salt, because it seems to me that you've been reporting to me with less than the truth. Most of these documents I've got here now, certainly the pertinent ones, the ones that indicate evidence, have only come into my hands here in the last 2 weeks. I've gone down to the courthouse and paid money to have files copied down there. I didn't even have a copy of my statement of claim, and there was discrepancies in that for over a year. It would have been nice if I could have sat down at home and read it at my leisure and looked for any contradiction that might have been in there. And yeah, indeed, there was one.
All right, David, you have just used a phrase that is just an absolute icebreaker in terms of confidence. You suggested that we are dealing with you less than truthfully. There is no way that we are going to continue to act for you when you think that of us.
Well, I suspected, something that this might be coming here today. And this is part of the reason why I was spending time at the law library, because I feel I have to educate myself. I don't believe that the system is working for my best interests here, even though I am the victim. And that annoys me all to hell. I really placed a lot of faith in the law profession in general, what it stands for. Mark Whittemore has already indicated to me that I cannot trust a professional, not one iota, and there seems to be more evidence as I go through life trying to sort this thing out from other people that tell me things like you can't win a lawsuit. There was two times, I don't know whether it was a Voltaire or somebody said, he's been broke twice in his life. Once when he lost the lawsuit and once when he won one. In other words, you can't win. Well, I see no justice in looking at a monster of an entity that you have to try and fight your way all the way through to finally find justice. As far as lawyers are concerned, you're governed by the Law Society, which is your own entity. So you're a self-governing entity, and I see very little indication of reprimand for mistakes, errors, omissions, a lack of integrity, all the way along. A lot of the case studies that I found so far are incomplete, and that either they weren't able to prove their point against the attorney, or they couldn't prove damages afterwards, which I find absolutely amazing.
There's something that's happening today. It's what's called the calling of the list.
That's right.
Okay. At 10 o'clock, we, as your lawyers, are supposed to be in court while the judge that's sitting this week sorts out what cases go next week and in what order. I don't think we can continue to act as your lawyers. What I'm going to suggest is that Marvin go over to that you go over to it as well.
I was planning on doing that anyhow.
That we advise the judge, and I think it'll probably be Judge Shadetz, who's up here from Nanaimo, that our relationship with client and solicitor has broken down, and that we cannot act for you further. You have a choice to make. Think about it between now and 10 o'clock, and that is whether you want to go ahead and do this trial on your own. You are an individual, and under our system, you're entitled to do that. Companies have a little more trouble. They're supposed to appear through lawyers, but as individuals, you have the right to be heard by the Supreme Court, and you can present your own case. By several reports, been spending a bunch of time in the law library, and you seem to have a bunch of notes, so you may think about doing it yourself. You have no faith in lawyers, you say.
I've certainly lost a bunch.
Okay, and the other alternative is that you ask for an adjournment so that you can find different counsel, and that lawyer can familiarize themselves with the file and do the trial when he or she is familiar. So those are your choices.
These were the considerations that had already ruined my mind.
Okay.
I expected you to either step down or settle this thing. Personally, I didn't think you were going to step down,
yeah.
Because I do owe you money. You do have my files. I understand that I can apply to the court to have those files presented to me prior to paying you, because this is going to be a problem.
On the right terms, the court will order that.
Mm-hmm. And I may have to do this, although I've got the bulk of them, and anything else I do need, I can go down to the courthouse and have copied. I don't believe there's a whole lot left that I need.
Well, I made a recommendation to you about settling. You are quite within your rights to say you won't give me those instructions. If that's your position, I sure as the hell am not going to go out and settle it on my own. Not that dumb.
No, there's nothing here to settle unless you start attaching some zeros to his offer, sitting.
Yeah.
$7,500. By the time I pay you out on this, am I going to have 5 cents left?
You would, but that's neither here nor there.
The idea of it is it's a compromise. A compromise. Mark Whittemore's not happy. You're not happy. Nobody's happy. That's the nature of a compromise. The idea is that you're hedging against a possible loss. That's why you would settle. That's the motivation to settle.
I've already lost, Marvin.
When someone like Mr. Hardwick tells you that your chances of succeeding at trial are less than 50%, that's a factor that you should consider in weighing your potential successes.
If I had complete faith in Mr. Hardwick, absolutely. But I'll be honest with you, and you're absolutely right. The cat's out of the bag. I've lost a lot of faith with this company. I don't feel you're acting in my best interest. I feel that you're protecting one of your own here by negotiating a settlement of $7,500 on a $41,700 chain. That's what's owed to me, $41,700 and some odd dollars. From what I've read, the time of the damages occurs at the time of the advice that was given. We're talking summer of 91 now.
No, damage doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens when. If Whittemore had done a careless job of representing you at the time the deal closed, but Valley Waste paid you every dollar you were owed, you hadn't suffered a damn cent of damage. Damage happens when damage happens. Don't argue law with me.
Give me a second to go through these notes here. I don't have the advantage.
David, I'll be quite frank with you. I'm not interested in arguing law with you. I've spent 25 years learning your law.
Quite confident? I see that.
Yeah.
And that's good for you. I'm not very confident. No. I've got a grade 10 education. I feel I've been taken advantage of something fierce.
Yeah. Anyway, this will happen in probably courtroom number 2. Marvin will be there to let the court know that we can't act. I'd appreciate if you were equally frank with the court and said that you don't want us to act.
You would appreciate that.
Well, no, I'm just saying, I don't want to get over there and hear that there's that you want us as your lawyers, because that's not what you're telling us this morning.
I was going to leave you in place as my attorneys, because I feel this close to a trial is a real bad time to change horses.
That's not a comfortable time.
It is not a comfortable time, and this is why I'm not surprised that it comes up today.
No.
But you know best where my situation is. There's no doubt about that. As to whether you're acting to my best interest is questionable.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I want to even argue that point with you right now as far as when the damages actually occur.
I don't think that's going to advance our discussion at all.
No, certainly not. I know I can prove your point wrong because I have it here in my notes. I recall writing it down. I recall reading it since then. But as you can see, my notes are kind of falling apart here. But that's just the way things are going.
So is our relationship.
Yeah, for a time now, I would think. You know, especially when you told me you had no idea what was going on here when we went to discovery with regards to Del Aarons or anything much about this case. Well, I sure wish I had my buddy here with me every time I talk to you folks.
Yeah, well, I wish you wouldn't make self-serving false statements to your tape recorder buddy.
Well, we have a lot of wishes, and most wishes aren't granted. I'm just looking for justice right now. I think I can find it.
Okay.
Thanks for your time, Mr. Hardwick.
All right.
Okay, you were saying the problem is?
The problem is that usually when a solicitor transfers his file over to someone else, it's usually to another solicitor, and the file is transferred on things called undertakings for example, the orderly payment to the previous solicitor's account, okay, that kind of stuff, okay? But because you aren't a solicitor, you can't give us those kinds of undertakings, okay? So we have to find another way to secure our account from you, okay? Now, what we propose to do is to take a mortgage on your property, okay, as security for our account, okay? That doesn't mean that you're unable to tax our account, because you're lawfully able to do that, okay? And we're not wishing to stand in your way to do that. But it's just that we have to have some form of security from you prior to us releasing the contents of your file to you today.
Boy, there's that security word again, eh? It keeps popping up in my life. Kind of after the fact, usually.
Well, this is before the fact.
Well, I'm not prepared to sign a mortgage over to you. I've already got enough in the way of mortgages on my property, my home.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to keep that one way or another. I earned it.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly enough money out there someplace that's belonging to me that I could pay my whole damn mortgage off and be done with it.
Right.
I'm not too happy the way this has been handled, obviously.
Right.
You have my feelings on that. Things were left way too long. You can turn over my files, or you can hold on to my files, whichever you choose. I cannot proceed properly without them. It's going to hamper my ability to see things to an end without all of my files. The decision's up to you, but I won't sign a mortgage over. I don't know how you've broken down my bill. This would be the first opportunity for me to have a look and see what you deem that I owe you anyhow.
Well, okay.
And it's going to take some time to go over all this, and I'm behind in my appointment schedule here again. I spent a half an hour waiting for you.
Well, I mean, you can appreciate the size of the file, and it took us a long time to get all of that ready. So, I mean, I told you three. That was my best estimate this morning at 11 o'clock, so that's all I could do. But what I'm prepared to do is I'm prepared to give you our invoice for services to date. You can have a look at that, and if you find it acceptable, like I said, I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from your legal rights in order to have this bill reviewed, okay? The only thing is that we need to have some security for whatever we're going to be entitled to down the line.
Well, I mean, you can always sue me. Is that not right? I believe you've got a contract signed by me on an hourly basis.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what the heck to do other than that. I'm not prepared to sign one for any more of my personal property to anybody. I'm just sick and tired of people picking my pockets.
Well, and I guess I'm just not at liberty to relieve the file to you today on that basis.
No, this is the bill with regards to Valley Waste and not with...
It's all together.
It's all together, right?
It's one bill for both actions.
Total fees, $9,066, and subject to both taxes. And then there's another total non-taxable disbursements of $614. Jesus, we're up to $14,000 I owe you. Big pile of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as $10,000 per case, I think, was quoted to me if it actually went to court. We haven't been to court. We've conducted two discoveries now. And that's about the extent of it. You know, I'm not certain I'm happy with your totals on this, and I definitely will look into it, you know, with a lot of scrutiny.
Yeah, that's fine. That's your right to do that. So.
Preparation of subpoena to Del Aaron's. I haven't seen Del Aaron's subpoena. You know, I haven't had a copy of anything basically until I came in here last week and started asking for copies of stuff. Up until then, you sent me the odd bit of correspondence notifying me of one thing or another, but
most
certainly not anything for me to peruse at my own.
David, most people don't want to see a copy of the subpoena because it is meaningless to them anyways. I mean, all they take comfort in the fact is that we've done it.
Well, it has been done, and so Dell has been subpoenaed.
Yes.
Okay, it has been sent to him. You've got preference. Has it actually been sent to him, or was it just prepared?
No, it's been sent.
It has been sent, okay.
In the hands of the process server.
Okay. See, I've got another problem there, too. I'm not exactly sure how the heck I'm supposed to serve Adrian, because I'm not even sure when my court case is. I'm going to tell him Monday morning, because that's what's on the papers, but I know damn well it's not going to take place on Monday. So I'm not sure how to handle that, either. There's a ton of things I'm not sure how to handle, but I'm certain it wasn't handled properly here. And, well, and that would probably be my biggest complaint about this bill, was the fact that nothing got done. You know, Mr. Hardwick indicated this morning that we didn't have enough evidence to proceed to court with this, but I've got in this pile of paper here a letter that you filed stating that you were prepared over a year ago to go to court.
I don't think that Mr. Hardwick ever said that this morning.
Well, I could replay the tape if I wanted.
Right. You should have that.
No.
completely what you're doing. It's fine for the book to you, but in the morning,
Jeffrey P. Skelton.
Yes, it is.
So why is he interested in interest rates at that time?
Not your solicitor, David.
That's really too bad. I think you're a damn fine attorney. I think you're hampered by your acting in conflict with your ethics here. That's my opinion, of course.
These are notices of intention to act in person, okay, and we'll need these signed as well, in both of the actions.
Keeping in mind, of course, this wasn't my idea to let you go. This is your idea to decline on the grounds that I have lost faith in you.
Yes.
It's amazing you don't have to state why I've lost faith in you.
It's generally regarded to be a private matter between the client and its solicitor.
Unless the client, I guess, wants to make some noise about it and air it publicly.
That's your prerogative, man.
It is.
Okay.
So, I should be signing this on personal too. Actually, I'd like to see you draft something up saying that you resigned from this, which is basically the way it went. Mind you, I've got it on tape, too.
Well, I need to file something that isn't a prescribed form, and that's what this is. These are the recognized documents that when someone such as yourself are going to be taking over from a solicitor, or in the interim between the appointment of a different solicitor, it allows the other party to know what is going on, and that's basically what it's for, to allow the court and the other party to know that they should no longer be contacting me, that they should be contacting you personally. And that's what I've indicated to Mr. Skelton, and I've given him your phone number. And obviously you're going to have to be in contact with him with respect to the common book of documents. So you just sign there.
Some damage done here presently, but then again, I'm not a lawyer. I regret this one. I don't like putting pen to paper at all anymore.
I would never try to pull a wool over your eyes and do something that I'm not entitled to do or do something.
I think you did with regards to Adrian's affidavit here by telling me that there were no other copies anyplace else. You didn't see the need to correct any errors.
No, well, I told you that we never gave it to the other side. Show me Adrian's affidavit.
Thank you.
I gather that the part that you think is inaccurate is paragraph 3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where it says, I was present during several conversations that the plaintiff had with his solicitor, and there was nothing expressed by the plaintiff to lead me to believe that he would depart from his position. Okay, and I gather your concern is that Adrian was present after the contract had already been defaulted upon.
Adrian was present for phone conversations, and that's the only conversation he was present to overhear, were phone conversations. He wasn't present at any time in Mark Whittemore's office, which is what you might indicate in the reading of that, or might determine from that.
Okay, but this is something that Mr. Nevermont reviewed, was happy with, and signed. I mean, this is his
affidavit. I reviewed
this. This is his affidavit, right?
And I reviewed my statement of claim, I reviewed my affidavit, and overlooked a clear contradiction in there. Overlooked it entirely because I thought I was reading what I just stated and skimmed over the words without taking time to deliberately read the whole thing over, which is what Adrian did, I would imagine. You know, you're in the back of your mind, you're thinking $125 an hour, let's get on with this. So you don't pay close enough attention. After the fact, when you sit down in your own living room and you read things, then you find some discrepancies.
Like
which
what?
Is what I did.
Like what?
Well, like he wasn't there in the office, which it sounds like perhaps he was in this statement here, and he agrees that there is a discrepancy. He doesn't see that it's a big problem either. I'm concerned that the judge is going to take a look at every little detail that's written here, and any contradictions that come up in trial is going to take away from a person's credibility in their testimony, and that's what concerns me. Is losing any credibility, seeing as though this whole thing seems to be based on nothing more than testimony, and that's all we would have gone to court for had you continued to represent me. Is that correct? Were there any other avenues of evidence that you were looking into?
Like you referred to this morning?
Well, like that, or anything that maybe comes to your mind that didn't come to my mind. I mean, you're the lawyer. So basically we're going to go with our affidavits and just kind of hash it out on the stand there, not bother with any phone documents to try and verify anything one way or another, not bother to go with any... Well, Dale Aarons has got a phone bill I'd like to take a look at personally.
You watch. Corbin Brown was on TV, I would imagine.
I do tend to watch a little more TV than I should, but then I have an awful lot of time on my hands.
All right. Not that it's a particularly relevant example, but... How often do you see affidavits put to witnesses on TV?
Can't say that I really recall.
Right.
You know, I watch more like the Rockford Files.
Okay. Well, I mean, like I was trying to explain to you before, I mean, the affidavit of Adrian Nevermont, it will probably never be referred to by anybody. Okay. The fact that it's in the court file doesn't mean a thing, because what you're thinking is that Mr. Skelton's going to come down and look at the court file prior to the trial starting. No, won't happen.
Well, I figured the judge would probably go over some of this.
The judge isn't going to look at it. Why should he? He's going to have Adrian Nevermont on the stand.
Fine.
He's going to have a chance to look at Adrian and gauge whether or not he's telling him the truth by what he's telling him. He's not going to look at anything more or do any more investigation than what... Mr. Skelton and now what you are going to point them towards. That's it. You're making something out of nothing as far as Adrian Nevermont's affidavit goes.
Okay, so long as you feel confident that way, I'm satisfied with that.
That's what I tried to explain to you before. And tonight it seems you'll go home and you'll think about it and go, well, you'll get your blood boiling again.
Possibly.
The problem is...
plenty of time to do that.
The problem, exactly. The problem is, David, is that you have failed to get on with your life, okay? This, or these lawsuits with Mr. Whittemore and Consolidated Accord have consumed you to the point where you haven't been able to do anything else.
I can't disagree with that.
And as a plaintiff, that is not a very impressive thing to take to the court, all right? A judge is not going to be too impressed by somebody who only... focuses on this litigation. Because why? Why would they do that?
It represents...
I know that.
Yeah,
I know that. I know what it represents to you. But also, life goes on. What happens when when these lawsuits are finished? What is David Thompson going to do?
He'll lose 4 years
of his life.
He's lost 3 years of his life, and hopefully he'll get back to his life and get on with his game plan with the boat charter business in the garage.
Well, the same is true for a personal injury plaintiff or any other kind of plaintiff. The judge wants to see that you're dealing with your pains and you're moving on. Okay? You're making improvements with your life. And if... I don't know. I don't think that we would have reached this stage had this not become an all-consuming passion for you, but...
Do you think I would have settled for $2,500 much sooner, or... I don't understand why we wouldn't have reached this stage if it hadn't become a passion with
it. No, because I just don't think, or I think, that you haven't been listening to what it is that Mr. Hardwick and I have been trying to tell you. That's all. End of story.
Well, I do recall you trying to tell me that this application 18A was going to succeed because we didn't have any testimony to verify my statement of claim.
No, I don't think that I ever said that.
Yeah, you did, actually. On our way out of here that night, we stopped at the top of the stairs and you reiterated the possibilities of my losing were very good.
Yeah. How does that translate into the Rule 18A succeeding?
Well, this is what you're talking about, my losing. The possibility of my losing on this Rule 18A was very good.
There is a possibility of losing on any case. The most sure case is possible to get lost for whatever reason. It's the vagaries of litigation.
Yeah, very good, or possibly you could lose, break it down. You told me I stood a very good chance of losing here, and I hoped I realized that I would have to pay not only your bill, but Mr. Whittemore's bill to Skelton as well.
We had that conversation, yes we did.
Certainly.
And it was my duty to inform you of the risks that are inherent in losing, right? You have to take all of that and measure it against what your chances of winning are, okay?
I have no ability to measure my chances of winning or losing except for by the performance of my attorneys.
Well,
and when my attorney comes up and says you stand a good chance of losing this 18A application, and I'm thinking, holy smokes, we haven't even started to get into the meat of this thing and already I'm going to lose it because I got nothing to base my claim on.
Anyways, I've already told you where I think the nub of your case is centered, right? The nub of your case.
In me getting on with my life.
No. The nub of your case, where your case is going to turn, okay, is who the judge believes at that crucial time when you sign this contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the best way that I can...
And what's the evidence for that? What's the evidence for that?
Basically just testimonial evidence. Unless
from
I
who?
Can get
from who?
From Bell Norquay, from Adrian Nevermont on my side, from me 30.
You mostly... Everybody else is window dressing. The same thing with Mr. Whittemore. Who he believes at that crucial point in time, that is where your case is. It's not with respect to the phone bills here, there, or anywhere else. I mean, your case is not going to be built around whether or not Mark Whittemore called Mr. Ross. That's not your case.
No, of course not, because I don't deny that he called Mr. Ross. I'm certain he must have one or two more times, obviously more than that, because he ended up with a contract that I've never seen before until I walked into his office. It was the first time I saw this contract. He got it from Ross, I gathered.
Right, and that's what he says in his affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But he got it on his own. He was negotiating on his own, even after he's claimed that he wasn't negotiating. There's evidence of his negotiating. He wasn't hired to negotiate, he states in a letter.
So, we're prepared to give you the file, okay?
Not but I have to be prepared to sign over my house. And now I'm handling this case myself, so I think my chances are even less now because I don't have a good attorney directing it.
Well, I mean, that...
I don't have an attorney directing it, let alone a good one.
But David, you can't blame us for that because you stood in court this morning
mm-hmm.
when Justice Chabot gave you the opportunity of adjourning the trial, indicating to him that you wanted the trial adjourned,
mm-hmm.
okay? Which you probably would have got because, number one, Mr. Skelton wasn't there to
mm-hmm.
object.
Certainly.
All right? And he was asking you, what do you want to do? Do you want to go get another attorney?
No.
Do you want to handle this yourself? And you said, I'm going to handle it myself.
This has told me there aren't too many attorneys in town that I can trust with this. And my inquiring about second opinions has given me a pretty good idea how lucky I'm going to be fielding an attorney for this.
Oh, and you know why? You know why?
Because I'm suing a lawyer.
Exactly. We have to live in this town. right? We have to deal with Mark Whittemore on a daily basis.
Certainly not. If you win this thing hands down, you won't. He'll be sweeping your streets is what he'll end up doing here for his unethical behavior.
I'm not going to comment on that, but I mean, we're going to have an ongoing relationship with not only Mark Whittemore, but other lawyers in town, and that's why it's hard to get people to sue other lawyers. Simply for that reason alone. Not because there's a conspiracy out there, but we have to live here, we have to be professionals here, and people talk. Other lawyers talk.